The Sports Report is brought to you by iHome, the number one brand in digital audio. From Lightning Dock alarm clocks to rechargeable Bluetooth boomboxes and quality affordable headphones, iHome has you covered. To learn more, head to iHomeAudio.com. Welcome to episode number 400 of the Sports Report. I'm Paul Roberts on GrizzlyProductions.tv. New shows every Monday on The Grizz. The show is free in the podcast section of iTunes. And you can follow me on Twitter at TheSportsRPT. That's my handle on Twitter, TheSportsRPT. And then there were four. Only four teams are still standing in the NFL. I'll tell you how they got there. It wasn't easy for a couple of them. The Green Bay-Arizona matchup Saturday night was one for the ages. You can't make this stuff up. Who needs reality TV when you have the NFL? I'll take the playoffs over Survivor any day of the week. And there was a flurry of activity last Thursday. The action was fast and furious when it comes to coaching news, all of that coming up. Plus, there were two big baseball signings this weekend. They kind of got lost in the shuffle of all the NFL action with the divisional round of the playoffs. So we'll take a look at some big bucks, no whammies stop that were thrown around over the weekend in Major League Baseball. All that coming up here on episode number 400. How about that? Doesn't sound quite as cool as 500, but not bad, right? Started this podcast back in 2012. Got to thank my buddy since high school, Quentin Morris, for getting me started in this podcast adventure. Quentin, of course, a big national TV star now, but it's been fun. Certainly has been talking all the national stories with you as opposed to my radio show where I focus more on things going on just in the Philadelphia market. So thanks a lot for tuning in every week here on The Grizz. And of course, in the podcast section of iTunes, just do a search for The Sports Report and it'll come right up. Of course, I appreciate everybody following me on Twitter. I'm at TheSportsRPT. Love to see your comments there. If you agree, that's fine. Disagree, that's cool too. We're on Twitter at TheSportsRPT. Hey, it's sports, right? If we agreed all the time, how boring would that be? Some of my best friends, we get in arguments about sports every week. That's the beauty of it. So thanks a lot. Appreciate the support. Keep those five-star reviews coming on iTunes. Let's start with the Packers and Cardinals out in the desert. It was 38-8 Arizona when these teams played just 3 weeks ago. The Vegas odds makers were expecting a lot of points, but it was 7-6 Arizona at halftime. Carson Palmer, who really struggled at times during this game, hit Michael Floyd for an 8-yard touchdown midway through the first quarter. Green Bay put together two 17-play drives that resulted in field goals in the second quarter. Those two drives alone took up almost 15 and a half minutes. The Cardinals' offense could not get on the field. The Pack ran for a buck 35. They averaged 6 yards a carry. And Arizona has a really, really tough defense. Green Bay, the number 5 seed, went up 13-7 early in the third on an 8-yard touchdown pass to Jeff Janis. What? Yes, the same Jeff Janis who had 2 catches and no touchdowns the entire season. Much more on him coming up. The Cards settled for a short field goal in the third and trailed 13-10 going into the fourth quarter. It stayed that way until the final 5 minutes, and that's when things got nuts. I mean, it was just bonkers out there. Palmer was picked off in the end zone early in the fourth. Again, he wasn't nearly as sharp as he was during the regular season, and he caught a break with less than 4 minutes to go. His pass was deflected, went into the arms of Floyd for a go-ahead 9-yard touchdown. sometimes it is better to be lucky than good. Green Bay got stopped on downs on the ensuing possession, giving Arizona a short field with only 2.5 minutes remaining. On 2nd and 8, with Green Bay out of timeouts, Bruce Arians decided to throw the football? What? It was incomplete. Stop the clock. I hated that call. You run the ball, you milk the clock there. It's fine to be aggressive, but not in that spot. He gave a helping hand to Green Bay. The Cardinals did get a field goal on that short drive, but they only took 43 seconds off the clock. They went up 20-13, so still a one-score game. On 4th and 20, with 1 minute to go, Aaron Rodgers launched a deep ball to who else but Jeff Janis, and it went for 60 yards. It was 4th and 20. Game's over, right? Wrong. Justin Bethel was in coverage. Two mistakes. First, he let Janis run behind him. Second, he totally lost sight of the football. It's 4th and 20. How do you let a receiver get behind you? Janis was getting playing time because Randall Cobb suffered a chest injury in the first quarter, and Davante Adams was ruled out with a knee injury. So Green Bay was really shorthanded at the wide receiver position, and they were still right in this game. So back to Rodgers and Janis, who turned into Jerry Rice all of a sudden Saturday night. With 5 seconds left, Rodgers heaves a deep ball to the end zone. He got it off right before he got hit. Arians wanted to blitz there, so the Cardinals only had 4 players back. Aggressive or stupid? You be the judge. And I know Arians now is the cool coach with the cool hats and everybody loves him, and they did win. But man, oh man, if they would have lost, a lot of second guessing would have been going on today. Arizona got burned on that Hail Mary because they only had 4 players back. Janis went up in front of all-world defensive back Patrick Peterson, and he hauled in a 41-yard touchdown catch with no time remaining. Another Hail Mary for the Pack. They did it to Detroit, and they did it to Arizona. Unbelievable. They went 80 yards in 3 plays in 65 seconds to tie a playoff game on the road. Simply incredible. I go back to Arians, though, throwing the ball on 2nd down when Green Bay was out of timeouts. If he runs it there, there's no time for the Packers to do what they did. Anywho, bizarre ending. Now it's 20-all, so let's go to overtime. Why not? On the Cardinals' first play, Palmer spins out of a sack. He bumps into his own lineman, and he finds Larry Fitzgerald wide open along the left sideline. The veteran runs across the field, 75 yards, all the way down to the 5. Who says this guy is too old? They're out of their mind. A man had a career-high 109 catches during the regular season and 9 touchdowns. I think he can still play a little bit. On 2nd and goal, Arizona ran a beautiful shovel pass. Perfect call, perfect spot. Fitzgerald goes in, game-winning touchdown. A fitting conclusion that he ended up with the game-winning score after that huge 75-yard catch. 26-20 the final. Arizona wins it in a thriller. Oh, this was an instant classic. And I didn't even mention the coin flip. Oh, jeez. They had to do it twice because it never flipped on the first toss. Well, that's how wacky this night was. Fitzgerald, who's now 32 years old, had 8 catches, 176 yards. Palmer was 25 of 41, 349, 3 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. Rodgers, 24 of 44, 261, 2 touchdowns, and a pick. Again, I question some of the Cardinals' decisions, but they're moving on. Would they face the number 1 seed Carolina or the number 6 seed, Seattle? I actually went with the 6 seed here, and man, did I look dumb in the first half. But not the first time that's happened. We'll get to that game coming up in just a second. This is episode number 400 of the Sports Report podcast. I'm Paul Roberts, and I want to tell you about our great sponsor, iHome. They've been with the show for a long, long time. From the portable color-changing, how cool is that, IBT-74, to the 100% waterproof IBN6, iHome has all of your Bluetooth needs covered. From Bluetooth and docking clock radios to portable wireless speakers, iHome combines great value and exceptional quality. Yes, I said wireless. And check those out, IBT-74 and the IBN6. iHome also offers a full line of headphones, earbuds. If you're a fitness guru, if you travel a lot, or just like hanging out and relaxing, go to iHomeAudio.com. Look at all their great products. You can also check out the apps and accessories that they have. iHome is the number one brand when it comes to digital speakers. Their sound quality is unbeatable. The website again, iHomeAudio.com. iHomeAudio.com. Back to the NFL, and we will get to the coaching news. We'll talk a little Major League Baseball. That is on the way. Let me know what you're thinking on Twitter at the Sports RPT. The Sports RPT. Well, the Panthers started with a bang. How about a 59-yard run from the well-rested Jonathan Stewart on the first play? And they had such a big lead in the division, they could afford to rest him. He came back and exploded. Three plays after the 59-yard run, Stewart took it in from the four for the game's first score. Carolina was just getting warmed up. Less than a minute later, their stud linebacker, Luke Kuechly, how good is this guy? He's in the end zone, a 14-yard pick six. Russell Wilson was pressured. He was about to be sacked. He let it go. Kuechly right there for the interception. Easy return. Both of Wilson's interceptions were caused by the Carolina pass rush. They had five sacks on the day. The Panthers then went on a 15-play, 86-yard drive, capped by another Stewart touchdown run, and it was 21-0 just seconds into the second quarter. It got worse for Seattle. Greg Olsen's 19-yard touchdown grab on a gorgeous ball thrown by Cam Newton over the defensive back put Carolina up 31-0 with 6.5 minutes to go in the half. Now, this was supposed to be the closest game of the divisional round. It was a rout, a behind-the-woodshed special. Late in the first half, and at the time it seemed inconsequential, the Seahawks did an awful job of clock management. Maybe they were watching Andy Reid and the Chiefs. I don't know. First of all, they ran the ball on first down from the 33. They took way too much time. Then they threw a short pass over the middle with no timeouts. Seattle had to attempt a 55-yard field goal, and Steven Hauschka missed it as time expired. Poor job there by Pete Carroll and the offense. The Seahawks came out firing, though, in the second half. Tyler Lockett, he's fun to watch. He got it started, a 50-yard kickoff return. Wilson found Jermaine Kearse for a 13-yard score, and in 90 seconds, it's 31-7. Carolina punts. Seattle goes right back down the field for another touchdown, a 33-yard diving catch by Lockett in the back corner of the end zone, made it 31-14, and we're just midway through the third quarter. Seahawks scored again with 6 minutes to go in the fourth quarter on another Wilson to Kearse connection from 3 yards out, and now it's 31-21. It was 31-0. Think about if they would have got that field goal at the end of the first half. Could have been a one-score game. Instead, Seattle's still down 10. It was big. On the ensuing drive, Ron Rivera ran the football on 3rd and 8. Some fans booed. I loved the call. Drain the clock. He took it under 3 minutes. Rely on your defense, which has been terrific all season. And it was still a 2-score game at that point. sometimes the conservative move is the right move. And I liked running the football there. Seattle drove 60 yards, got a field goal, but there was only 1:12 left, so they had to try an onside kick. Hauschka got the real high bounce that you're looking for, but all-pro linebacker Thomas Davis leaped to grab the football and ice the game. 31-24 Panthers in a tale of two halves. Carolina has now won 12 consecutive home games. They will host Arizona at 6:40 Eastern Time on Sunday. The winner goes to the Super Bowl. Newton was 16-22, very efficient in this game, 161 yards and a touchdown. Obviously, when you're up 31-0, you're not going to keep throwing the football. Stewart ran for 106 on 19 carries. Seattle had not allowed a 100-yard rusher in 27 games. Wow. Wilson was 31-48, 366 yards, 3 touchdowns, but 2 interceptions. Marshawn Lynch only had 6 carries in the game for 20 yards. Lynch was out for 2 months after the abdominal injury and then surgery. He was a non-factor because Seattle got so far behind, Seahawks had to throw the ball all the time. The Legion of Doom was pathetic in the first half. I called them the Legion of Gloom on Twitter. They were very good in the second half, but it was too late at that point. You can't spot a team 31-0. Now, one of the touchdowns wasn't their fault on the pick six, but still, Panthers ran for 144 yards on 41 carries. That's what they do. That's their MO. That's their style of play. They held the rock for 35 and a half minutes and did not turn it over once. Wilson's 2 interceptions led to 10 points for Carolina. I admit I got this one wrong. I went with the road team. The 2-time defending NFC champs are done. All 4 home teams came out on top this weekend. In the wild card round, you remember, all 4 road teams won. Now to the AFC, as we march on here on episode at number 400 of the Sports Report. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Paul Roberts. Again, hit me up on Twitter at TheSportsRPT. New England held off Kansas City 27-20. The Chiefs' 11-game winning streak finally came to an end at Foxborough. The Patriots got Gronk and Julian Edelman back from injuries, which was huge. A different team when you have those two weapons. Less than 5 minutes in, Gronkowski already had a touchdown catch. That didn't take long. An 8-yarder from Tom Brady. You have to double-team this guy whenever possible. It still amazes me when I see single coverage or you see the guy all alone. I mean, everybody knows that he's an absolute beast. He's one of the best tight ends ever to play the game. Ever. Any era. New England went up 14-3 on a 98-yard drive in the second quarter. That's not easy to do on Kansas City's defense. That's one of the best defenses in the league. Kansas City got a field goal to get within 8 at the break. Gronkowski's 16-yard touchdown grab made it 21-6 in the third. I never really thought that the Patriots were truly threatened. I didn't get that impression. It was 27-13 with 10 minutes to go. Now, to Andy Reid. And if you ask any Eagles fan about Andy Reid, within 30 seconds, they will bring up his clock management problems, and it reared its ugly head again on Saturday. Now, don't get me wrong. I think Andy Reid is a very, very good coach. He turned around Philadelphia. He turned around Kansas City, too. But, man, looking at the clock, he struggles. Kansas City had a first and goal at the 1 with 2:50 to go and only got one playoff before the 2-minute warning. One play. And it was a running play. You are down 2 touchdowns. You got to hurry up. What are you doing? It's not time for a nap. The Chiefs eventually scored, but there was only a 113 left to play. Andy Reid, very good coach, but for whatever reason, struggles with time management. Gronk then recovered the onside kick. Patriots won 27-20. They advanced to their fifth straight AFC Championship game. What a run. I mean, that is remarkable. You may not like them. I know a lot of people can't stand them. That's fine. But you have to respect what this team and Belichick and Brady have been able to do. Five straight AFC Championship game appearances. They just keep winning and winning and winning. Gronk had 7 catches for 83 yards, 2 touchdowns. Edelman, 10 catches for 100. He was targeted 16 times. They are a much better team with both those guys back. The Patriots threw it early and often, and they've had games like this over the course of the regular season. They just say, hey, we're not going to run it. Brady was 28 of 42, 300 yards, 3 combined touchdowns. They only ran it 14 times for 38 yards, and 6 of the 14 carries were by Brady. Steven Jackson only had 6 carries for 16 yards. So Kansas City dominated the time of possession, 38 minutes to 22. But they wound up with field goals in the first half instead of touchdowns. And in the playoffs, you got to get 7s, not 3s. Still, a great run by Kansas City after a 1-5 start and not having Jamaal Charles, who's one of the elite running backs in the game. Going into the final game of the weekend, everybody's wondering, will we get another Brady Manning AFC Championship game? The answer is yes, but the Broncos were not very convincing on the offensive side of the football versus the Steelers. The first half was drops-a-palooza for Denver. How about helping Peyton out a little bit here? They had 5 drops in the first half. It looked like a game of hot potato when you were a kid. And they trailed Pittsburgh 10-9 at the break. Another low-scoring game. Brandon McManus made 5 field goals on the day, including a 51-yarder as time expired in the second quarter. The Broncos and Steelers traded field goals in the third, so it's 13-12 Pittsburgh entering the final quarter at Mile High. Could the number 6 seed without Antonio Brown, the top receiver in the game, upset the number 1 seed? Nope. With 10 minutes to go, Bradley Roby stripped Fitzgerald Toussaint and DeMarcus Ware recovered at Denver's 35-yard line. That was a gigantic play. And Roby was being blocked. He only had 1 arm free, and he was still able to knock the football loose. The Steelers were up at the time. They were on the move. A critical turnover. The only one of the game. Then Manning went to work. He hit Benny Fowler for a 31-yard gain on 3rd and 12. Then he found Emmanuel Sanders for 7 yards to the 14. And from there, Denver kept it on the ground. C.J. Anderson's 1-yard touchdown run gave the Broncos the lead with 3 minutes to go. Manning's 2-point conversion pass to Demaryius Thomas made it 20-13. Still 1-score game. Ben Roethlisberger, who played hurt, showed a lot of guts. He was sacked on 4th and 5 with just under 2 minutes remaining by Ware. McManus booted a 45-yard field goal, so now it's a 10-point advantage for Denver, and it is party time. Pittsburgh added a late field goal with 19 seconds left to make the final 23-16. It wasn't pretty, but the Broncos move on. This was Peyton's 55th game-winning drive in the fourth quarter or in overtime. That is an NFL record, and guy's got a lot of records. He was 21 of 37, but remember, there were a lot of drops, 5 alone in the first half, threw for 222 yards. Denver was balanced, 37 pass attempts, 33 runs. C.J. Anderson went for 72 yards on 15 carries. A Big Ben wound up 24-37, 339 yards. He aired it out on the first possession to show that his shoulder was okay. Steelers had a lot of big plays in the passing game. Usually Denver does not allow that. Bryant Hayward Bay, Coates, they all had big gains. Both offenses, however, were poor on third down. Pittsburgh was 2 of 12, Denver 3 of 15. That's a money down. Both teams struggled there. And it's not like the Steelers have a great defense. It's not about the steel curtain anymore. They win with their offense. Now, this is a team that has Roethlisberger quarterback and all those receivers led by Brown. I mean, they win now by putting up points. The play of the game was the fumble by Toussaint, and you can't put it all on one guy, but that turnover gave Denver life in the fourth quarter when they were in trouble. The Broncos' offense has to be better if they're going to beat the Patriots, and get ready for Manning versus Brady 24-7. You thought Donald Trump got a lot of airtime? Now it's going to be Manning and Brady all over the place, every channel. It's going to be all day, every day, through Sunday. The two future Hall of Famers have met 16 times. Brady has won 11 of them, but in the playoffs, they're an even 2-2. The Patriots opened up as a 2.5-point favorite out in Vegas. That quickly went up to 3, 3.5. Carolina is a 3-point favorite versus Arizona in the NFC Championship game. So who do you like? Are you going with the favorites here, New England and Carolina? Do you like some underdogs? So let me know on Twitter. Who are you picking on Championship Sunday? The AFC, the NFC, let me know. I'm at the Sports RPT on Twitter. The Sports RPT. This is episode number 400. All right, let's get to all the coaching moves. There was a lot. We go back to Thursday, and ESPN reported that Tom Coughlin withdrew his name for the Philadelphia Eagles vacancy. There was a lot of talk that, you know what, maybe he might stay in the division and take over in Philadelphia. Sources told ESPN part of Coughlin's concern was about the staff in Philadelphia. He felt he would not have a strong candidate to serve as offensive coordinator if he took the Eagles' job. You know, Coughlin resigned after coaching the Giants, led him to 2 Super Bowls in 12 seasons, and apparently still feels like he's got 2-3 years left as a head coach, but he wants to win right now, and I never thought that Coughlin was the answer in Philadelphia. I mean, he's 69 years old, and the Eagles aren't about winning right away. They were 7-9 this past season. Plus, Coughlin made some very, very questionable in-game decisions this season. How about the game with the Jets? Going for it on fourth down instead of kicking a field goal to put you up 2 touchdowns. Giants ended up losing that game. They were awful. I mean, downright awful in close games. Some of that is on the head coach. Ben McAdoo was hired as the Giants head coach, the 17th in their history. He had served as the offensive coordinator under Coughlin the past couple of seasons. He's never been a head coach, but he did earn a lot of praise for his work with Eli Manning. He's only 38 years old, so McAdoo will be the second youngest coach in the NFL. The youngest is Adam Gase, the former Bears offensive coordinator. He was hired by the Dolphins. Gase is 37, and a lot of teams were interested in him. McAdoo also interviewed last week with the Eagles. He ends up staying in New York. Giants hired him to replace Kevin Gilbride. And, you know, his West Coast offense and a guy by the name of Odell Beckham Jr. helped to revive the Giants' offense. So you get a receiver like that, and your offensive numbers should improve. The Giants were number 6 in the league in points this past season. The Eagles finally have named Chiefs offensive coordinator Doug Peterson as their new head coach. They could not announce anything until Kansas City's season was over. That finally ended this weekend. So they made it official today. Peterson will be 48 later this month. Played 10 years in the NFL, including the 99 season with Philadelphia. He was a longtime backup to Brett Favre. He became an assistant with the Eagles in 2009 under Andy Reid. He then followed Reid to Kansas City in 2013. Now, he's only been a coordinator for 3 seasons, and Andy Reid is in charge of that ship. He is running the show, not Doug Peterson. You know, Peterson did call some plays, you know, in the red zone he called some things, but trust me, that is about Andy Reid. So I think a lot of Eagles fans aren't exactly thrilled with the resume for Doug Peterson. I thought Jeffrey Lurie, the owner, needed to expand his search. Sean McDermott was out there, the defensive coordinator for Seattle. We all know how good their defense is. And he was a former assistant in Philadelphia. So he's familiar with the Eagles, the fan base, the passion there for football. Josh McDaniels, Matt Patricia, the coordinators for New England. If I'm Jeffrey Lurie, I'm bringing them in. Again, you may not like the Patriots, but they win all the time. Belichick's done a pretty good job. Why not at least bring them in for an interview? I thought that should have happened. It did not happen, and now they are moving ahead with Doug Peterson. But you just don't get a wow factor with Peterson as the head coach. 49ers hired Chip Kelly. He is their 10th coach in franchise history. Takes over for Jim Tomsula, who was 5-11 in his only season. Kelly is now 52. He was fired by the Eagles in his third season. They went 6-9 under his leadership this past season. He gets $24 million over 4 years. I had to laugh at the tweet I saw from wide receiver Torrey Smith. He said, "Guess I might have to start running right now to get in shape." Because, you know, there have been a number of players who have come out and said that Chip Kelly just practices too hard. That eventually you got to ease up a little bit. It's not college anymore. You're playing a 16-game schedule. A lot of bumps and bruises, injuries. You're going up against grown men. And you have a 53-man roster. It's not like in college where you have over 80 scholarships to hand out. Kelly went to Philly after 4 seasons out in Oregon. He had back-to-back 10-6 seasons. It looked good early on. They got to the playoffs his first season and then lost to the Saints. He does have a connection out there in San Francisco. Senior personnel executive Tom Gamble was with him in Philadelphia. Kelly, by the way, the first coach in Eagles history and only the second in NFL history to win a division title in his first season. The Niners, you know, the offense, they've had a lot of trouble. 31st in the league in total offense and dead last in scoring. So they're hoping he can change things around. Now you have Colin Kaepernick out there. Now he's had 3 surgeries, his left shoulder, his left knee, his right thumb. Salary, just under $12 million for 2016. I think most people thought he was going to be gone. But then you heard Chip Kelly's coming to town. You think twice. You pause. You hesitate. And I wonder now if the 49ers will hold on to him as opposed to trading Kaepernick or cutting him. Kelly's offense, despite what he says, it works best with a mobile quarterback. When you're running zone read, the defensive ends have to respect that your quarterback can actually run. Unlike a Nick Foles or a Mark Sanchez or Sam Bradford. They're not exactly Carl Lewis or Usain Bolt under center. Kaepernick can run. Now, I don't like his accuracy, his decision-making, but he can run. And I'm wondering how this will play out now. They really have nothing to lose out there, San Francisco. But we'll see what Kelly's offense does and if they do indeed keep him at quarterback. Speaking of offense, the Buccaneers hired offensive coordinator Dirk Cutter as their head coach. He replaces Lovie Smith. That firing surprised me. This is Cutter's first head coaching job in the NFL. He had been Tampa Bay's offensive coordinator. Before that, he was with the Falcons and the Jaguars. The Bucs offense went from 30th to 5th this year. That's quite a turnaround. And he did some good things there with the rookie out of Florida State, Jameis Winston. So Dirk Cutter, the new coach in Tampa Bay. Finally, the Titans decided to keep Mike Mularkey as their head coach. He took over for Ken Whisenhunt, coached the last 9 games for Tennessee, 2-7 over that stretch. Since Jeff Fisher left in January of 2011, Tennessee has had 3 head coaches. Remember the saying, you can't fire all the players, so he got rid of the coach. That's how it works with some of these bad franchises. A Mularkey coach 2 years in Buffalo, one in Jacksonville. He is just 4-21 over his last 25 games as a head coach. He's known for helping young quarterbacks, and that's what Tennessee has in Marcus Mariota out of Oregon. What's noteworthy, all of the teams, all of them who hired new head coaches, they went with offensive guys. Whatever happened to defense wins championships? They all hired guys who have offensive backgrounds. Interesting. And I thought, you know, Sean McDermott or Matt Patricia, defensive guys, you know, I thought that they might be in the mix. But that's it. All the jobs already taken now. What do you think about some of the changes in the head coaching ranks in the NFL? Let me know on Twitter at the Sports RPT. Tell me what you think is the best hire and the worst hire. Let me know on Twitter, best hire, worst hire at the Sports RPT. Finally here on episode 400, we mix a little bit of baseball here because I think this got lost in the shuffle. Chris Davis staying in Baltimore, 7 years, $161 million. He's 29 years old, had a monster 2013. Remember that year? 53 homers, 138 RBIs. Then in 2014, he hits just 196. His average dropped 90 points. Last year, back up to 262, 47 bombs, 117 RBIs. A bottom line, power is hard to find. You don't see many guys hitting 40-plus home runs anymore. The steroid era is over. The game, thankfully, has changed. I still think that's too big of a contract for Davis, $23 million a year. But again, it's not easy to find power, and he is well-liked in Baltimore. The Ian Kennedy deal may have been more surprising to me. The 31-year-old right-hander got $70 million over 5 years from Kansas City. He was 9-15 last season with San Diego. His ERA was 4.28. Kennedy's only had one great year. This guy came up with the Yankees, never panned out in New York. 2011 was his big year with Arizona. He won 21 games, had an ERA under 3. He was 21-4, 2.88 ERA. That's 5 years ago, though. He's a strikeout pitcher. He can eat innings for you. And the Royals lost Johnny Cueto. He got mega bucks to go to the Giants. But Kansas City still had a solid staff. Kennedy, at best, to me, is a number 3 starter, probably on a really, really good team. I didn't think that he would get this much loot at 31 years of age. And how about Kansas City wheeling and dealing and breaking the bank all of a sudden? I mean, they used to spend no money. At times, they are a-changing, as one of my favorites, Bob Dylan, likes to say. $70 million for Ian Kennedy? Man, oh man, he got basically the same contract as Alex Gordon, except, you know, one more year. Gordon's was 4 years and around $70 million. It's good work if you can get it. So if you want to talk some baseball, you can always do that on Twitter at the Sports RPT. Have a great week, everybody. Enjoy Championship Sunday. Hopefully the snowstorm doesn't hit the Mid-Atlantic and Northeast states over the weekend. Oh, man, I hate the winter. I hate it. It's freezing today. Windy out. I feel like I'm in Chicago, not an hour from Philadelphia. Oh, man, can we fast forward to April or May? Is that possible? Anyway, thanks so much for your support over the past several years. Appreciate. We'll keep it rolling here. 30 to 40 minutes, fast-paced, high-energy sports talk, opinionated. Hopefully, we entertain and inform here on The Sports Report. I'll talk to you again next Monday. Have a great week, everyone. This has been episode number 400. I'm Paul Roberts on GrizzlyProductions.tv and in the podcast section of iTunes.